I think we are the people that we're waiting for.
Yeah.
And I think that, like, people always say to me, well, how can I give? How can I contribute to this work? I say, show up in your life.
Get happy. Der Achtsamkeitspodcast von Antenne Bayern. Und hier ist Kati Kleff.
Und ich sage herzlich willkommen, ihr Lieben. Wie schön, dass ihr auch an diesem Freitag wieder dabei seid, denn diese Folge ist ein echtes Highlight. Für mich ganz persönlich und ich hoffe natürlich auch für euch. Denn ich hatte die große Ehre und Freude, mit dem einzigartigen Dr. Joe Dispenza über Transformation zu sprechen. Die Verwandlung des Menschen aus sich heraus. Und zwar im wahrsten Sinne des Wortes, von innen nach außen und nicht umgekehrt. Wenn wir nämlich die komplexen Prozesse in unserem Nervensystem und in unserem Gehirn begreifen, wenn wir die schädigenden Auswirkungen von Dauerstress und den dazugehörigen Hormonen besser kennen, wenn wir lernen, unsere negativen Prägungen, unbewussten Glaubenssätze und Traumata zu benennen und uns ihnen zu nähern und schließlich Fähigkeiten erlernen, mit denen wir die alten Denk-, Gefühls- und Verhaltensmuster transformieren, um das Leben zu leben, das wir gerne leben möchten. Transformation durch Meditation. Dr. Joe sagt, was auch die klassische Psychologie schon seit vielen Jahrzehnten weiß: Unsere unbewussten Gedanken beeinflussen unser Gefühlsleben und somit unsere Verhaltensweisen und kreieren ganz unbewusst immer wieder dieselben schmerzhaften, nervenzehrenden oder auch einfach negativen Erfahrungen. Und sie machen uns krank. Die Geschichte von Dr. Joe Dispenza ist weltbekannt, aber für Neueinsteiger hier nochmal wirklich in aller Kürze. Im Alter von 23 kollidiert er bei einem Triathlon mit einem Truck. Seine Wirbelsäule ist mehrfach gebrochen. Die Prognosen sind ziemlich düster und die Ärzte glauben nicht, dass er jemals wieder laufen kann. Die einzige Behandlung scheint ein Stahlgerüst zu sein, um die Wirbelsäule zu verdrahten. Der junge Amerikaner entscheidet sich gegen die aufwendigen OPs und für die Kraft, die seinen Körper auch erschaffen hat. Er vertraut auf das große Potenzial der Selbstheilung. Wochen später verlässt er die Klinik aufrecht gehend auf seinen eigenen Beinen, ohne Stahl im Körper. Seitdem widmet er sich unermüdlich dem unglaublichen Potenzial, das in jedem von uns steckt. Sein Team besteht aus renommierten Ärzten und Wissenschaftlern, die überall auf der Welt Studien erstellen, forschen und mit Universitäten Daten zusammentragen und die immer häufiger beweisen, zu was wir in der Lage sind, wenn wir nur wissen, wie. Dr. Joe Dispenza hat einen Bachelor of Science und ist Doktor der Chiropraktik. Er ist umfassend ausgebildet in den Bereichen der Neurowissenschaften und Neuroplastizität, quantitative Elektroenzephalogrammmessungen, Epigenetik, Geist-Körper-Medizin und Hirn-Herz-Kohärenz. Außerdem ist er New York Times Bestseller-Autor, Forscher und Dozent. Wie kein anderer verbindet er Persönlichkeitsentwicklung, Quantenphysik, Spiritualität und die Neurowissenschaften miteinander und legt dabei großen Wert auf Evidenzen und saubere Studien. Er trifft damit Millionen von Menschen auf dem ganzen Globus mitten ins Herz. Seine Workshops sind in der Regel in Minuten ausverkauft. Und nicht nur die großen Erfolge, die er durch seine Arbeit vorweisen kann, geben ihm recht, sondern mittlerweile auch die Wissenschaft. Also wie man vielleicht hört, ich bin ein großer Fan. Im August war er in Europa und ich durfte ihn vor seinem Progressive Workshop in Basel zum Gespräch für Get Happy treffen. Dieses Gespräch könnt ihr euch im englischen Original anhören oder mit deutschen Übersetzungen. Oder noch besser, ihr hört einfach beide. Das hier ist die englische Version. Und jetzt, ihr Lieben, wünsche ich euch tolle Erkenntnisse und viel Freude mit dem fantastischen Dr. Joe Dispenza.
Ah, thank you, Katie. It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's so amazing that there are 7,000 people traveling to Basel to do the progressive workshop with you. Isn't that, for you personally, a total blast?
Yes, you know, I was thinking about it on my way to Basel, and I thought, where else in the world will there be 7,000 people in the same place at the same time, meditating on the same thing? It's really an honor to get a group of people together for community and to do something really amazing. And so I think that it'll be a wonderful, wonderful opportunity.
Is it a special place here? Is Switzerland something that has a special energy or a special power for you?
I used to think that way, but I think more it's about really delivering the right information and finding a nodal point where everybody lines up and we can make it special. So I go to all different kinds of places around the world, and I think it's really about people. And if we can get everybody coherent and get the community in brain and heart coherence, I think we can produce some amazing outcomes.
And the community is growing, for me personally, in an absolutely unexpected way, especially in the last years. Is this what you're observing as well, what you're feeling as well?
Well, you know, I think that we have such profound scientific information in the studies that we've done in the last several years with gene expression, with brain function, with immune regulation, with heart coherence, with thousands of cellular metabolites that we're measuring. It really is pointing the finger that the science is supporting so many of the things that we're doing. It's I can say certain things now with such certainty because I know it's the truth. And then by the same means, we have so many wonderful testimonies of people that have healed themselves of stage four cancers, chronic health conditions, blindness, deafness, and they stand on the stage and they tell their stories. And there's nothing like a great story. So if you look at the testimony and you look at the science, it says that evidence really is the loudest voice. And so there's been an outpouring of growth in our community because I think this is a time in history where it's not enough to know. It's a time in history to know how. And so people are interested in the practical application. And because of that, yes, we have an emergence of a new consciousness. And even the way I teach in the last few months is very different than a year ago because people are so well informed. And because they're well informed and because they really want to apply and personalize it, the results have been pretty outstanding. And so the science is supporting the testimony and our events really sell out, you know, sometimes in 5 minutes because I think it's a movement. And so it's a new consciousness. And I think community really is the future. So I'm super excited.
I'm absolutely with you because when I watched What the Bleep for the first time in 2005, there were so many people like, okay, what is this going on? What are these people talking about? And today we have the evidence. And I could imagine that this is also for you a kind of relief that what you know for so many years now is finally evidence-based.
Sure. Well, I'm an evidence-based person. I'm very grounded in evidence because I'm a pragmatist, you know, more than anything else. And, you know, you can't call this pseudoscience any longer. I can say things with such conviction now. And I used to say that we should never wait for science to give us permission to do the uncommon. We should go out and do the uncommon and have science come and study us. And that's exactly what's happening. Our scientific team, reputable, very, very well-published scientists, are so excited about the discoveries that we're making about human potential. And they started out as doubters. So I'm proud of that because they're coming and measuring so many wonderful things, and I keep saying to them, I can't believe this is the truth. I mean, I can't believe that it is the truth, and I think people do the best with what they think is available. And if you're unaware of a possibility that you could heal, then if you're unaware of it, you won't make any different choice. But the moment you become aware of it and you see the evidence, whether it's in the science or the testimony, sooner or later it's going to become relatable to you. And it's no different than the 4-minute mile. Once the 4-minute mile was broken, it got 2 weeks later, it was broken again. And scientists said it was physiologically impossible. And now over 1,400 people have broken the four-minute mile. And when someone heals from stage four metastatic cancer and they're on the stage and they tell their story, there's nothing like a great story. They're actually speaking the truth. It's, mm-hmm. I'm not saying it, they're saying it. And it's relatable. Mm-hmm. At that point, and once it becomes relatable, you can identify with that person and say, wow, she doesn't look any different than me. She doesn't look young. Mm-hmm. She doesn't look like she's vegan. She doesn't look white or whatever it is. It's just a person up there that's telling their story about how they overcame themselves and overcame certain self-limiting beliefs. And I think there's such a change in consciousness now. And once you become aware of a possibility, awareness is consciousness. And and there's a change in consciousness in the world right now. So it's super exciting.
Do you think that the pandemic was a kind of accelerator for this awakening, or whatever you may call it?
I think the pandemic was a great opportunity for people to break from their routines, to reassess their values. I think it was a great opportunity for people to consume information. They had the time.
Oh, yeah.
And for me, there were people, many people that saw the pandemic that were facing a chronic health condition, to be able to work from home and not have to take their kids to school or run errands. And they had more time to invest in themselves. And I think that when we invest in ourselves, we invest in our future. And I think it's great that people made the time, and there were plenty of people that changed their health without ever coming to an event, which I think is great. Mm. They actually studied the information and really tried it out and saw if it worked for them. And many people will say, God, I believe this is the truth. I believe that this works. I just didn't believe it could work for me. And that's a big moment for a lot of people. That's when you start to choose yourself and you start showing up. If you don't show up and you don't do it, then you don't believe it's possible. If you do show up, it means you must believe it's possible. Now, the important point is, when you finish the work, when you're done, do you believe in your future that it's possible more, or do you finish and you believe in it less? And the only way you believe in it more is when you change the way you think and the way you feel. So I think if you keep doing that, I think you change your state of being. And there are, as we've seen, profound biological changes as a result of it. And many of the chemicals and the wonderful metabolites that we're isolating, I say to the scientists, where are they coming from? Mm. The person's not taking anything, you know, no exogenous substance. The body's manufacturing its own pharmacy of chemicals that's actually bringing it back to health and balance.
Mm-hmm. I just heard yesterday that the thyroid has the form of a butterfly. Is that true?
That's true.
And isn't that crazy that you're talking about transformation and the caterpillar turning into a butterfly?
Yes.
And this so-called coincidence. That's so hard, getting goosebumps.
Well, transformation for the human being is exactly that. The caterpillar starts making a different choice at a certain point.
God, I start crying.
and the transformation is actually an inward process.
Yeah.
And what we discovered with human beings is a lot of those changes that we thought would take a long time, if people immerse themselves in the process of transformation, within 4 days, within 7 days, we've seen the immune system strengthened by 50%. Yeah. We've seen the brain work way better. We've seen thousands of metabolites in 7 days suggest that the body is living in a different reality. Like, and they're in a ballroom, and there's nothing really special happening in a ballroom. And yet, their inner changes are being reflected in their biology. And once again, if you don't know that's possible, you won't believe it. Mm. But once you see that it is possible and you start believing in it, I think your world begins to change.
I absolutely sign that, because it's happening to me and probably a few of the people here sitting in this room. What do you think makes it so difficult for us human beings? What is the point?
Well, I think we've been programmed, and it's not a bad thing. I mean, we're in three-dimensional reality, and I think people... And it's just the way that evolution has happened, that we just rely on something outside of us to take away some feeling that we feel inside of us. And so if we feel emptiness, if we feel lack, if we feel pain, if we feel sadness, if we feel resentment, if we feel frustration or anger, we look for whatever it is in our outer world to take away this feeling in our inner world. And reality is the same way. People wait for their healing to feel gratitude. They wait for their new relationship to feel love. They wait for the mystical moment to feel awe. They wait, you know, for their success to feel empowerment. They wait for their wealth to feel abundance. They wait for the event to occur to feel the emotion. What we've discovered is the exact opposite. The moment you feel gratitude, you begin to heal. The moment you're in awe with life, you'll have a mystical experience. The moment you're empowered, you're stepping towards your success. The moment you feel worthy, you're abundant, you're generating wealth. I think that the moment you're in love with life, you create an equal, and that's causing an effect. So I think, you know...
it's a chemical reaction of the body.
Right, but we're just programmed into taking a pill or getting something outside of us or having an experience or getting on the phone or playing a computer game or doing whatever to take away that feeling. The problem is that you got to keep doing that to make the feeling go away. So we actually discovered that you could actually change your body's inner state physiologically, and there's a match in chemical substrates that are created. And if you teach a person that they can make that change without anything outside of them by changing their inner state, the body's so objective, it doesn't know the difference between the real life experience and what the person is actually imagining in their mind and body. And so that's exactly how the placebo works. And when we studied the placebo, we said, do you need the sugar pill? Do you need the saline injection? Do you need the false procedure? Or can you just teach the person how to do that once they understand the science behind it? And lo and behold, it's very effective.
What I just realized in the last weeks when I was preparing for this workshop and do my meditation again every day, which I didn't do all over the winter time, but now I'm coming back, was that the body is living in the past.
Yeah.
And this is so brilliant. In your words, could you explain that to our listeners? What does that mean?
Well, I think feelings and emotions are the end product of past experiences. And we can remember experiences better because we can remember how they feel. The problem is the stronger the emotion we feel from some event in our life, the more altered we are inside of us, whether it's fear, whether it's shock, whether it's pain, whether it's joy. The stronger the emotion we feel inside of us, the more we pay attention to the cause outside of us. And the brain actually freezes a moment in time and takes a picture. And that's called long-term memory. And so then that information from the experience is etched in the gray matter of the brain, and the emotion reaches the body. So every time the person thinks about that trauma, that betrayal, that shock, that event, they're producing the same chemistry in their brain and body as if the event was happening. And so the thought and the feeling, the image or memory of the event and the emotion, the stimulus and response is actually what's conditioning the body to become the mind of that emotion. So the body is so objective that it doesn't know the difference between the real life experience that's creating that emotion and the emotion that that person's fabricating by memory or thought alone. And so many people then, they wake up in the morning and the brain's a record of the past. They start thinking about their problems. Well, their problems are memories of the past. And they're connected to people and objects and things at certain times and places. And the moment they're remembering their problems, they're thinking in the past. And every one of those problems, because they've experienced it, has an emotion associated with it. So when they feel unhappy or they feel fearful, now their body's in the past. Because thoughts are the language of the brain and feelings are the language of the body. And how we think and how we feel creates our state of being. So most people start their day in a state of being that's directly correlated with the past. And their biology is actually staying the same. So then if you keep conditioning the body emotionally to become the mind and it becomes subconscious, Now the body literally is in the past, and that's the familiar known past.
And so, this is the comfort zone, right?
It's completely. Yeah. So the person who's suffering from some past experience, if you ask them to step out into the unknown,
yeah, scary.
And stop suffering, they can't predict anything that's going to happen, so they cling to the familiar feelings. And the hardest part about that process of change is actually making a different choice, right? Mm-hmm. And so what allows us to begin to make a different choice is information. If you give people the right information and they realize, oh my God, that's me. I do this all the time.
Everybody
once
does
you
this
know,
all the time.
Of course, once you know, you can't not know.
Yeah.
So then you have to make a choice. Like, and to catch yourself doing that is a victory. And those victories add up. And so in the beginning, it's tedious. But over time, if the person stays in the familiar past and they tell the story of why they are the way they are, then they keep firing and wiring the same circuits,
the same things,
and keep creating the same emotions. They're reaffirming the identity of the past, right? So then it takes crisis and trauma and disease and diagnosis for many people to finally say, oh my God, I want to change. And our message is, why wait for that point?
Yeah.
Then why not make the change before we get to that point?
And the body is such an important player in this game, because in my experience, so many people were thinking, or are still thinking, over years and years and years, a so-called positive mindset is enough. And they forget the body. They try to just control it with their mind.
Yes. Well, this is a kind of interesting conversation, because this work is definitely not about positive thinking.
Yes,
people
exactly.
who think positively are feeling negative. So they can say, I'm healthy, I'm wealthy, I'm free. And the body's saying, no, you're not. You're miserable.
Yeah.
That thought never makes it past the brainstem into the body, because the body's been programmed into suffering or unhappiness or pain. Now, there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just mismanaged our attention and our emotions and our energy. Teach a person how to trade that unhappiness and teach them how to feel a different emotion. And you give them the science and the understanding behind it. Whatever you practice, you become. If you keep practicing suffering, you're going to get really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
You start practicing gratitude and you do that over and over again, you'll get really good at that. Now,
it's like a muscle, right?
Oh, it is the memory.
Yeah.
So then if you can keep practicing feeling that, just say, an emotional gratitude. Gratitude, the emotional signature of gratitude, is something wonderful just happened to you.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say it and you're in a state of gratitude, you'll accept, believe, and surrender to that thought, and it will begin to program your autonomic nervous system into a different outcome. So we work on changing a person's emotional states as well as changing their mind, because there is a mind in the body.
Yes.
And there's a body mapped in the brain and the mind. So there's no separation between the two. We just have to understand the process of how to do that.
Yeah. And the autonomous nervous system, which is working autonomously as long as we don't know. Right.
Right. Well, look, I mean, if you think an unhappy thought, you're going to feel unhappy.
Yeah.
How did that happen? Your autonomic nervous system is the servant.
Yeah.
To the thought that you think. You think about a memory that makes you feel afraid, your autonomic nervous system, through the hypothalamus, whips up a different batch of chemicals to immediately signal neuropeptides, to signal hormones for you to feel those emotions. And your body's really, really responding to your mind in that way. Well, over time, the autonomic nervous system just gets used to fabricating those chemicals automatically. So then what does it take to break those hardwired patterns in the brain? What does it take to inhibit the conditioning of those emotions to the body? It's no different than going on a drug rehab. The body, the moment you deprive it of its typical emotional states, it's going to crave those emotions. And this is why people have a difficult time in changing, because they succumb to the body and just make the same choice, do the same thing, recreate the same experience, feel the same emotion, and they say, this feels right. No, that feels familiar.
Right.
That feels comfortable. So then change is going to be an uncomfortable process the moment you make a different choice. Now you're out of the known and you're in the unknown. And the unknown, historically in human beings, is a very scary place. It's the unpredictable.
Brain doesn't like the unknown, right?
The brain, all of a sudden, in the unknown, fabricates the worst-case scenarios mm-hmm. as the outcome, because in survival, if you prepare for the worst, there's better chances of survival. But yet, that unknown is actually the perfect place to create from. You can't create from the known. So then you get a person outside the box of their known and into the unknown, and then you instruct them and teach them what to do. They could actually rewire their brain and then condition their body emotionally into a different state.
Mm-hmm.
And if you keep doing that thought and that feeling, the clear intention or the image of that future and the emotion associated with it, the stimulus and the response, you can condition the brain and body into a future. And lo and behold, the biology in the body will actually change as a result of it.
Mm-hmm.
So then it just takes practice and it takes repetition.
Yeah, practice is a big challenge as well, right?
And this is what I'm really proud of when it comes to our community. And mm-hmm. we have a huge global community. We do the work.
Yeah.
And we don't do it to please God or to be holy or do the right thing. People do it because they don't want the magic to mm-hmm. end in their life. Now, what do I mean by that? You see a person, you say, hey, why are you so unhappy, Nicholas? Oh, I'm unhappy because of this thing that happened to me at a certain, with this person. And what they're really saying is that circumstance is actually controlling the way I feel and the way I think. Mm-hmm. Well, anything that controls the way you feel and the way you think, you're victim to that circumstance or that person. And so then when things are good, you feel good. And when things are bad, you feel bad. But it's dependent on the circumstances mm-hmm. in your life. So then anything that controls your feelings and your thoughts that you're a victim to, you feel like you have no control over. So then, but in the work, we're teaching people that how you think and how you feel actually produces an outcome in your life. Okay, so I'm going to change the way I think and feel as an experiment. I don't know, I'm going to experiment. I'm going to think this way. I'm going to feel this way. I'm going to change my energy. I'm going to change the way I think, the way I feel. I'm going to change the way I act. Will there be feedback in my life? And what is the feedback? If I'm truly making my inner change and all of a sudden I'm seeing it manifest in the outer world as an opportunity, as a synchronicity, as a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
I guarantee you that the moment that coincidence happens, you're going to start believing that you're the creator of your life instead of the victim of your life. And that synchronicity doesn't produce the emotion of sadness or pain.
Mm-hmm.
The synchronicity produces the emotion of joy and excitement. And that's the energy that fuels you to want to do it again. So people in this work, it's not a have to.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the synchronicities are happening.
The Give me coincidence, more of that stuff.
They're like, I don't want to stop.
Yeah.
There's no way I'm going to stop. It's too good. So that's where it just becomes a lifestyle.
Yeah.
It just becomes a lifestyle. And I love this community because you take an example of a parents who meditate every day, their children watch them do it, and it just becomes something that you do. And we have children that come to our events that are 7, 6, 8, 9, 10 years old, and they sit through the whole entire thing. Who's that child going to be
mm-hmm.
when they're in their 20s, right? And they're understanding that they are the creator, and they're witnessing miracles and transformations. That's part of their experience of life. I think that that's hopefully going to change the future in some way.
Yeah, and maybe meditation will be taught in schools one day. That would be great. I know that there are some schools starting with that in the US and also in Europe.
We're doing a study right now with 1,000 children in Australia.
Oh, wow.
Between the ages of 4 and 12.
Amazing.
A 10-week study, 5 meditations, each meditation done for 2 weeks. On brain coherence, on heart coherence, on what the thoughts we tell ourselves, how to shorten your emotional responses. Mm-hmm. We five different meditations that are wonderful for these children. And they send me pictures of all these kids meditating. And the principal of the school is very serious about enhancing children's experiences with learning. And we're partnering with Bond University at the Gold Coast there, and we have some great researchers, and we're collecting data just to see, in fact, how they perform or how what kind of changes they make. So we are working in schools now. We're working in prisons. We're working in orphanages. We're working in all with veterans, with military, all kinds of different organizations, because the concept of change, this is not something you talk about. You have to understand that there is actually a formula. Mm-hmm. And we've all done it at least once in our life. We just want to make it a skill.
Mm-hmm. And I think if more people on the planet are realizing that we all live in survival mode for the last centuries and landing in the present moment, that would be probably the time when peace on Earth is coming.
Well, let's hope. I think we are the people that we're waiting for.
Yeah.
And I think that, like people always say to me, well, how can I give? How can I contribute to this work? I say, show up in your life. Show people what greatness looks like. Show them what love would do. Show them what the example of a true leader that leads with their heart looks like. Be the example so that people go, wow, Katie, you're different. I don't know what it is about you, but there's something different about you. You're different. People need examples. They need to see it. They need to, it's not talking philosophy. There's enough philosophers in the world.
No, that's too intellectual. This is not.
This is living it. This is living it. This is practicing it so much with your eyes closed. You get good enough, so good you can do it with your eyes open. Mm. And living in survival has just been the human program. And when you're living in survival, you're living in stress. And when you're living in stress, you're physically, chemically, and emotionally out of balance. Short term, no problem. Mm. Long term, the body's going to head for disease. Because if you live in emergency and you're mobilizing all that energy for some threat or danger that's real or imagined, there's no energy for growth and repair. Mm. And it's a scientific fact that the hormones of stress long-term push the genetic buttons that create disease. So think about this. Mm. People can think about their problems and turn on their stress response just by thought alone. Mm. That means your thoughts can make you sick.
Yeah.
And if your thoughts can make you sick, is it possible that your thoughts can make you well? And our data says yes. And I can say that with certainty now.
Do you remember the moment when you realized how you've been talking to yourself? Was there a moment?
Oh my gosh. I don't think it stopped.
No, me neither.
I think when I had my own personal injury, when you're facing something that's potentially life-changing for you, it's so funny that when we're in crisis, we tend to think about what we don't want to have happen instead of what we do want to have happen. And that was, for me, I couldn't get my mind for 6.5 weeks to do what I wanted it to do. I couldn't get it to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think survival, again, is preparing for the worst, right? So it takes an enormous amount of awareness, an enormous amount of energy to put your heels in the dirt and stop that process. It takes an enormous amount of energy. And yet, there's layers. And I think the greater you become in your evolution, the greater your challenges. And it's a never-ending process of overcoming self-doubt. And what is self-doubt? Living in survival and seeing the worst thing that happens instead of seeing the most profound thing that happens. And God, you gotta really work at believing that your thoughts actually do have an effect on your life. And doubt is the one thing that talks us out of possibility. So for me personally, it's never stopped. It's never stopped. I'm always faced with great opportunities brilliantly disguised as impossible situations. And there's got to be a mind or a door or a possibility to to find your way out of. And that's the excitement of the journey of being a human being. So many people heal in this work. And the next question they have is, can I heal others? Mm-hmm. Great question. And that's and the person who heal themselves can actually believe they can heal another person. And mm-hmm. now we have people that gather and heal people remotely. Mm-hmm. Because they understand the physics and the science of how it's possible. And they're healing those people. And we're studying it. We're collecting the data. Mm-hmm. But if you don't know that that's possible, you'll never make that choice. But the person who's chosen themselves and now is healing others, the experience that they have from healing another person and listening to a mother tell the story of how the child was born with a birth condition that caused them to be listless and not be able to connect and see or interact with their brothers. One coherence healing, and the next thing you know, this kid is looking at their brothers and smiling at her brothers. What do you think that mother is feeling? Mm-hmm. You're a part of that person's transformation. I was on the call when that happened. 80 people, we were in tears. Mm-hmm. We were feeling the same feeling as the mother. We were empathizing. We were empathizing with and rejoicing. Mm. The experience of healing another person produced a new emotion and caused the people who were in the healing, that did the healing, to feel more whole, to feel more love, to feel more profoundly grateful for life, to feel more complete. And when it came time to heal again, their doubt is less. Mm-hmm. When it came time to heal again, they could feel that emotion a whole lot easier. Mm-hmm. When it came time to be in life, they no longer were in lack. They felt like they were full, complete. I think that's the natural state of being. And I think human beings, when we're not living in stress and not living in survival, that's what divides us.
Absolutely.
What unifies us is that we are wired to take care of one another, to be kind to one another, to care for one another, to love one another, to heal one another, to shine for one another so others can shine. That's who we are as a species. And cooperation and collaboration and community, that's who we are. That's how we thrive that way. Hmm. So community is our future, and it's a new consciousness. And that consciousness is aware of more possibilities. And that's what makes the science and the compelling stories so exciting. And listen, they send me stories every day. That's my feedback. I say to my staff, this person is telling the truth. She is speaking the truth. And the science is quantifying it. So now there's an emergence like of a new consciousness. And people are now beginning to realize I can actually take part in my own change in my life, change in my health, change in my future. I just got to make the time to do it. And for some people, that's the hardest part, making the time to do it. But really, it really, that excuse of not having the time is sponsored by the belief
that you don't have the time.
No, the belief that it doesn't work.
Yeah, all right.
If you knew it was actually true that your thoughts and feelings have some effect on your life, you knew it on a visceral level, you would never miss a day, and you would never let any thought slip by your awareness unnoticed by you. Now, that's the work. Mm-hmm. And if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. And yet the people who heal, some people, it takes them 2 years. They never miss a day. You ask them if it was worth it, they would say to you, I would never give up a day. In fact, the hardest days were the most rewarding. Mm-hmm. My disease was my greatest teacher. They're no longer victimized by their condition. They're actually transformed from it. That's the good story they get to tell.
Mm-hmm. This is why I'm so open on that podcast. I'm talking about my trauma as well, talking about my therapy experiences, et cetera, et cetera. Because when I could do it, everybody else can do it. And if you could do it, everybody else can do it, you know?
Exactly.
And even Dr. Joe Dispenza is still evolving.
Of course, I'm certainly evolving. I'm a work in progress.
Yes.
Yeah. And look, if anybody can do it and you see it right in front of you, it's hard to forget that. I mean, you come to a week-long retreat, you'll witness. We had two people in our last event, our last week-long event last month, that came to the event blind. They walked out of that event seeing. In my lifetime, Katie, I never thought I would see that. Mm-hmm. What are the odds of one person with a neurodegenerative disease from birth seeing? And what is the odds of that person? What, one in a billion? One in 10 billion? I don't know. What about two? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you asked Joe Dispenza 2 years ago, if I thought that was possible, I'd say, yeah, maybe once or twice. And now it's just becoming the new normal. Like, I'm changed. I'm changed by watching people transform. It's way bigger than me now.
Yeah. And you know what's so interesting? The moment you say that, there's a little part in my mind saying, no, that's not possible. And I learned just to watch it.
Yeah, observe it. Yeah.
I hear the voice.
I always say, just because I have a thought, it doesn't mean it's true. Like, I mean, that was my moment of freedom.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, I'm mystified by it. They're my heroes.
Yeah.
They're my heroes. You would walk right past that person and never notice them.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, profound, the story, you couldn't make it up. It was so good. When she started seeing, she saw herself in the mirror, and when she was very young, she could see a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And when she finally, she progressed to the point where she couldn't see anything except shadows. When she started seeing her face, she saw her hair in the mirror, and she realized that her husband had been dyeing her hair blonde,
mm-hmm.
and she was a brunette, and she was mad at him. When she told the story, it was so great. I mean, you can't make that up. Mm-hmm. You can't make that stuff up.
Yeah, wonderful.
But listen, I want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to be there for that moment. That changes me. She inspires me about what is possible.
Yeah.
And that to me then is way greater than what I even could imagine. So I'm challenged in my own beliefs in watching some of the transformations. I mean, how do you explain somebody with metastatic carcinoma spread to their bones, their liver, their lungs, all their organs, through their pelvis, tumors in their spine? No, with a rare cancer that the response is 0.001 with the greatest chemos and drug trials. Completely, there's no metastatic lesions anywhere in this person's body. She's a cancer researcher.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I told her she found the cure for cancer and it was within her the whole time. Like, as a healthcare practitioner at one point in my life, I didn't believe at that point that someone can reverse something that progressive, and yet we're seeing it over and over again. Well, that says a whole lot about human potential.
Mm-hmm.
A whole lot about human potential.
Mm-hmm. I'm very excited what we will experience this weekend.
I promise I'll give you my best.
And I really hope that we, after this all pandemic craziness, that we can welcome you in Europe or in Germany more often in the future.
Yes, no, we have such an amazing German community. I mean, between Germany and Switzerland and Austria, well, 90% of the people coming to this event in Basel are German-speaking people, and the Germans get it. They love the science. They love the information. They're very practical and
disciplined, of course.
Super disciplined. And we just got to loosen them up, and the rest is easy.
Thank you so much for talking to me, because you have a big part in my transformation process as well. And right now I'm diving deep into Dr. Joe Dispenza's work. Just this morning, my partner and I, we've been in survival mode yesterday on this whole journey to Basel from Munich. And this morning we made the Find the Present Moment meditation, and we both cried. And came. It was, oh God!
Oh, you made my day.
Because it was. It's always for me, with very complex trauma in my childhood, it's always such a big relief to come back into the present moment, and then I start crying because I'm so grateful. And you see the tears coming into my eyes right now.
Don't you know your body is feeling that?
Yes.
Don't you know what it's feeling? A whole different set of chemicals
all over.
Listen, here's the beauty behind that, Katie. I want you to remember this. It's not that you react. We all react.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, how long are you going to react? That's the question. And you have one of two choices. One choice is to go unconscious, go back into your past, run a program, which is an unconscious process, and stay there until the chemicals finally go away because you go to sleep. Or you can say, oh my God, I'm out of balance right now. This is not good for me. Mm-hmm. This is not loving to me. And those chemicals are addictive, so it's really hard. But if you can convert in that moment and self-regulate, that is a huge victory. And in all of eternity, if you believe that you're eternity, you live in an eternity and you're eternal, that moment matters so much because that is writing yourself back into balance. And you can practice doing that and get really good at it. And when you get so good at it that no person, no circumstance, no condition moves you from that state, that's when you start mastering yourself. And that's when you no longer have to really work as hard to get anything you want. Somehow it seems to come to you. So it's always worth the effort.
Yes. I thank you so much, and I hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you, Katie.
All the best.
Thank you.
Ich hoffe, ihr konntet euch aus der letzten Dreiviertelstunde was mitnehmen. Wenn ihr noch niemals meditiert habt, dann probiert es einfach mal aus. Es ist wahrlich kein Hexenwerk und es kann unglaublich viel verändern. Ich packe euch nochmal die Folge mit Alexandra Schack hier in die Shownotes. Das ist nämlich eine wunderbare Folge für Neueinsteiger rund um das Thema Meditation. Und natürlich alle Infos über Dr. Joe, auch die findet ihr hier in den Shownotes. Hat zu mir hinter den Kulissen noch gesagt, be playful, sei spielerisch, probier es einfach mal aus, bleib über ein paar Wochen dran und dann schau mal, was sich verändert im Innen und im Außen. In 7 Tagen sind wir wieder da mit der nächsten Folge, dann freue ich mich auf die extrem berührende und sehr außergewöhnliche Geschichte von Markus Müller. Markus Müller war ein absoluter Top-Manager, Europachef von BlackBerry, bis ihm das Buch 5 Dinge, die Sterbende bereuen, die Augen öffnet. Er schmeißt alles hin, reist um die Welt, macht eine Ausbildung zum Sterbebegleiter und stellt sein Leben komplett auf den Kopf. Was er dabei alles erfahren hat, wie er dem Tod begegnet heute und vieles, vieles mehr, darüber reden wir in einem sehr persönlichen und wie ich finde sehr schönen Gespräch. Also bis in einer Woche, bleibt bis dahin wie immer zuversichtlich, bleibt gesund und stets neugierig. Es gibt immer was zu entdecken. Tschüss!
Get Happy, der Achtsamkeitspodcast von Antenne Bayern.